Hello and welcome to another episode of BushidoCast. I'm your host Craig, joined by my co-host Gav.
Hello, it's been a while.
It has been a while.
Yeah, so, nice to be back in the hot seat.
Yep, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So
what are we talking about today, Craig?
Well, it has been a while, and so we're slightly playing catch up here. What I want to do is kind of cover some of the Grand Masters that happened in Europe, and the one we're looking at today is the French Grand Masters, just to kind of put a little spotlight on that event. So in the background, I've reached out to the person who won that tournament, so the French Grandmaster. That was sort of, I think, towards the end of September, so we're a little bit behind on that, but we're getting there. I think it was an interesting one because different meta. It was a Shiho win as well, first Shiho win at Grandmasters. And we're doing something a little bit different today, just because chatting to the winner, they were happy for us to kind of take notes and talk to them and ask them questions by a Discord, and then kind of present that information effectively as like a listener's email, that kind of thing. So a slightly different format. We're going to give it a go, and I think it'd be quite interesting just to go through their thoughts on Shiho and how that's working out for them. So that's the main agenda, but I think we will likely also talk about Warfare. It's a tournament I ran it as TO. You were actually a player.
I was a player, yeah. And there is a bit of a theme here in that Shiho just seem to be winning everything, don't they? So
yep, that was a
Shiho good episode for those people who are, you know, the naysayers who think that Shiho are very underpowered.
Yeah, well, there you go.
They're doing all right, it seems.
Absolutely, yeah. And there's great connection there. Shiho win at the weekend at Warfare as well. So there does seem to be something in the water, so that's good to see, and we can probably opine a little bit on that, but also hear a little bit about hopefully your own experience at the tournament as well, given that you're
yes indeed players. Yeah, it was good to get some games in. I haven't been playing very much lately, but you know, tournaments are always a good thing, good way to run a list out, and it was a list that I hadn't really used before. We'll get to that later.
Yeah, that's a really interesting list. So yeah, keen. So lots to talk about. So we better jump in. The winner was Transience. That's his handle, playing Shiho.
And this is of the French GT, not Warfare.
That's right. Yeah, sorry. Very good point for clarification. Yep, this is the French Grandmasters. Played Shiho using the Guerrilla Warfare theme. So just a quick run through the list. Two Heimen, Shiho Kita with teachings of Yeshu Shi, that gives a tactician. Shiho Wimpy, Shiho Yusuk, and Paragon, which gives out a virtue token. Tanaka Naboku with Distaff Wolf. Distaff Wolf is the card that allows you to effectively take a Tanaka Samurai into Guerrilla Warfare and gives various other buffs, making them lull and reduce your samurai's melee boost. Yoshitaka, the drummer, trooper, and the eagle banner, which if you meet the right conditions can allow you to banzai with lull models. Very good. Some events in there as well. Okami no Mimi, which can grant sort of some defensive tech like range defense, and Preordain, which is the roll two dice. Those values can be swapped out during the game, so very good for for countering. Well, when you really need a certain dice roll, very good. Second chance to allow you to do rerolls on opposed test. So
they had Preordain and Second Chance.
Yeah, I did.
Quite a lot of cards, but quite a lot of models as well. How many models?
So 8 models, I think that is.
Yeah, okay. I mean, there's two Hymen in there, isn't there? Which are yeah. 4 rice each.
Yeah, it's not unusual to see Shiho running 8 or 9, even 9 models, to be honest. They are quite cheap generally, so you can fit in a decent sized warband. We'll get on to some of the luck cards that you just mentioned there, because I did ask about that because I thought that was quite interesting. So that is the list. I guess just background wise, as I said, I reached out to the winner and just asked if we could get some show notes really and then kind of go through them. He's fine with them just being conveyed conversationally, not word for word. So I'll kind of paraphrase a little bit.
Just to check, they're not in French, are they?
For me, thankfully not. my French will be up to that. He's kindly put them in English so I could navigate through them. So that's very good with them. So just looking at it now. If I do rephrase a bit, then that's kind of more my take on it, let's say, than the precise wording. Just scrolling down, I think it's probably first to say, like, he did think about the Wolf Clan rather than just pure Shiho to take. Or Tanaka, the Tanaka versus like the Lul Shiho. He did mention it's a very different type of Shiho in terms of its approach to the game. It's a sort of an approach that has an appeal, but less to their liking. And it's a bit more of a classic kind of setup play, if you like. And the focus is more around scheduling units to go in and really just doing a lot of damage when you exhaust your opposition. But I thought that was quite nice context, just to kind of like, you know, because you start at the faction level and then you kind of work down from there and then you sort of build some constraints, which is kind of how I've looked at Shiho in the past as well. You kind of set your constraints and then you kind of try to innovate within that. So that was, there's a good bit of context there. Once he went for sort of Lul Shiho, it seems like guerrilla warfare was the most attractive theme, and that is sort of the dominant theme, if you like, the most attractive theme, it seems, for Shiho to play. They do have a few other themes, I think they're sort of slightly less favored, I would say. You've got Black Eagles Coalition, which is kind of like a mini Ordered for Battle, and that's fine. It's just kind of, if you like the whole cyborg thing, it's got a few other benefits as well, then that's fine. But it's not quite as doesn't necessarily have as much flavor, if you like, as guerrilla warfare, because that does actually come with a lot of very nice and interesting benefits that really
just a 30 rice sideboard, isn't it, in that one?
I think it's smaller. I think it might only be 15. So that's
only 15.
Yeah. So,
not
but
very much.
It does have some other benefits as well. And then you have Shiho Return as well, which is kind of where you can mix the samurai together from the Shiho and the Tanaka samurai more freely. That's okay. I think actually I've played against that quite a few times. And I think it's fine. It's a nice way to bring in the two sets of samurai together. If you really want to do that. But now I think you've got Distaff Wolf, you can kind of get some of that within guerrilla warfare. It's probably less attractive. That's sort of, you know, possibly one outcome of that. With that in mind, guerrilla warfare is the theme. I'm sure most people know it. It's the one that allows you to take various benefits throughout the game. To improve your model's performance. One of the big ones is being able to reflank, decide which turn and side your models are flanking on, and change that during the game. You can reduce your boost cost as well, which is super powerful, or just like walk out of combat.
Oh, I love that walk out of combat, don't I, Craig?
That's it. That's the start of the turn one. Yeah, we'll no doubt get on to Kita. It's a very versatile, very powerful theme, and at the cost of being more restrictive, because it does limit you to lore models and Hiroto effectively. So it's a bit more narrow in what it will allow. Nevertheless, I agree. It's probably the dominant theme you'll see Shiho play. The other thing it can do, you can get some extra rerolls if your models are damaged. So if you're really kind of, your back's against the wall a little bit and it's turned out to be a bit of a brawl, that's quite handy. So it does an awful lot. Now, you can't do it all the time, and you can only sort of select one for a turn, and you can only kind of select two throughout the game. But that does bring a lot. So I can see the appeal there. So getting on to the heart of the matter with the profiles. You've played quite a few games against Shiho, so you're probably familiar with the general kind of style that they have, I suppose.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've only ever played against you using Shiho. You're fairly brutal with them. They're generally not very nice experiences. So yeah, I've never really understood when people on the Discord are complaining about them being underpowered, because I've only ever seen them, in the hands of a good player. Taking me to school.
So. Well, you do like to play monks, and if you can surprise a monk, stop the boosting, it is pretty brutal. I was about to say, I think you've got a gist of it, so I'll try to keep it at a certain level. Listeners, sort of, it's not going to be a profile by profile kind of analysis. This is a bit more thematic, hopefully get a gist of the players' views on some of the profiles and how to use them. So with that in mind, I guess their sort of view is that Shiho, apart from Hiroto and Takua, are fairly fragile, unprotected, 6 wounds, no armor, but relatively inexpensive, which is kind of what we were saying earlier about the numbers. With Ashigaru, probably not quite inexpensive, but still you can get a decent number of models onto the table. So you're probably going to be outnumbering a lot of oppositions in terms of just model count, because you've got those cheap Haymen as well, just to help bulk out. And that in itself, as a villager player, that's a certain form of quantity, yeah. Quality in itself.
It really does. Yeah, we'll get to my 12 model tournament list in a minute, won't we?
Yeah. So that's totally understandable. That that is an advantage that they could bring to the table. Keeping them on the table can, however, be the challenge there. So they didn't want to go off on too much of a tangent, but they did say, just looking at the Ashigaru, that they are nice and mobile, but they are a bit pricey for what they give. So they're sort of something he would use, but probably in slightly less competitive environments. And they're fun. I think he's looking for more synergies in future to really get them to shine.
Sure, they're the loyal Yarrowman, right? The Ashigaru, Shiho Ashigaru.
Yeah, you're a loyal Yarrowman, and you've got the archers as well. Now
and those Yarrowman, the hold the line key fee they've got is really good.
Yeah, I must admit, I'm quite fond of my Ashigaru. As you know, I often run predominantly Ashigaru list, which I don't see many other people doing. So I feel like I might be a bit of an outlier there. But I can see what they're saying. If you're just looking for a free melee dice model, you might as well just go for like a Jung or Silver Moon kind of Yokuhan.
Yeah, the Kyokuhan in Silver Moon and the Koenin in Jung, yeah. So, and they're only what? Both of those profiles are 8 rice?
8 rice, yeah. So, and you first. Versus 12, 12, yeah, and they don't on the face of it have a lot more, but it's all the little synergies within Shiho. It's guerrilla warfare, and you could arguably say, well, the samurais get all that as well. But having three melee dice is really nice in Shiho, where a lot of your other supports and buffs are catering for the fact that you're probably only going to have two dice. So it is really quite nice to have that those three dice and have that extra mobility, where if one person goes into your line, you can generate a lot of mobility for very little key. It's also some of the hidden rules that I find with those ones, because it's a move, you can't go through like impassable terrain, but you can just go through difficult terrain without being slowed down. And you don't have to take a fear test with those models as well, because they're not meeting the fear test criteria. So it's little nuggets sneaky. Like that. Yeah, it's little nuggets like that, which is just like, oh, okay, so you know, you think these Ashigaru don't have any fear tech, but actually they do. You don't think they don't have any train tech, but they kind of do. It's not always easy to get off, but it's become a lot easier now. The FAQ allows, it's more of like a within the pulse kind of thing. It's easier to pull off than it used to be. So it kind of works how you expect it to. But I do.
And they've got reach as well, which is always useful.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, they've got reach. They are a bit light on traits and other key feats, stuff like that. But they are just your Ashigaru, the basic troops. So. But I totally understand when people say that they just look expensive at, you know, 12 rise. That's, you know, compared to a lot of other factions, they have troops that are basically as comparable without hold line. That's a bit special, but they're much cheaper. So I think you really have to value that hold line. But that only gets better, really, if you've got Ashigaru. So I can see the conundrum, because then you buy more kind of these models to make them better, but then I think there is a kind of a point where it pays off. But as I said, I seem to probably be a bit on my own in that thinking at the moment, but I do think there is some solid play out of those Ashigaru. And I would say at the very least one Ashigaru, which I admit we won't get much out of the whole line from, but just one with Veteran of Sugoya is being brilliant for me. Just like it can bodyguard so many of your models. It's fairly cheap for a bodyguard profile at 13 rice compared to like Jade Mamba Guard, things like that. It's kind of on par, and it just does what you need to do when you really need to save your activations from other models. So personally, I find that super useful.
So just sorry, I'm a bit confused. I'm looking at the profile on the app. So how are they bodyguarding?
So there's an upgrade called Veteran of Sugoya.
Ah, sorry. Yes.
Yeah, so just a one rice upgrade. So it's
did mention that, but I just ignored it.
No worries. But let's get back onto it, because he didn't have any Ashigaru. I just thought it's an important one just to mention, because and we'll get onto it, I suppose, just list diversity in Shiho and just kind of, you know, using the full range profiles they have on offer. So, and I like the fact that he does say he does use them. It's just not something he's not leaning into heavily right now, but hoping that there will be more interest in the future. So that's cool. He goes on to mention, or they go on to mention, that the Shiho clan is often regarded as the shooters clan, and that's interesting. But I think the conclusion is that if you go lean too much into shooting, it's just only one part of the game, and it's going to be very powerful against certain lists and pretty weak against others. And that kind of, like, you know, that rock, paper, scissors, stone kind of style of play is just not something that they're into. So, and I get that, because I think you can kind of go too far with shooting, and you know, it may wipe one warband off the table nicely, and then you'll play, you know, some other warband. Like, you know, I think we've had matchups where skeletons into handguns and just, you know,
yes, all right. In fact, I took Jung, like, all, you know, all of the black powder weapons that I could fit into the list to the last Grandmasters we went to. Didn't do very well at all. It was fun firing off a lot of shots, and it was. Yeah. I took the list as a bit of a gimmick, you know.
Yeah, too much range can be, yeah, can be a little hit and miss.
I did beat Shiho though, actually, with my pistols.
Okay. So,
that's something.
It's got something for it. But there you go. So, I think, and they do say, like, look, an Ashikaru free melee dice and range attack isn't actually that bad in itself, you know, because it's a range unit that can also do some melee. And I'd agree with that. I think, like, again, they're not super cheap. 14 rise, they don't have like loads of specials. One thing I would say is those archers do help you navigate difficult terrain with Pathfinder, I think it is. So It's quite rare in Shiho actually, anything that helps you with terrain, and probably because they like to build in counters so you can use deployment to sort of, you know, counter the flanking shenanigans. So actually those kind of traits can be really, really useful if triggered at the right time. I've used it a few times with my Ito as well, because they've got an archer who's got that as well.
Is what, Pathfinder?
I think it's
I like it in the temple. Kato's got it too. I use it on Buffalo. That's always a nice surprise.
so it's a fairly balanced view on them, I think. So what next? So as for the samurai, so yeah, unsurprisingly, they really like the samurai. They do admit that they are a little bit weak compared to other samurais of other clans. That's not going to surprise many people. Shiho, from design perspective, were given their samurai like 2 melee dice, where most other factions would have 3 or 4 melee dice, but they're coming on from the flanks with booted. And actually it's the Ashigaru who have the 3 melee dice, so it's kind of inverted there. But they've been given a lot of help to allow them to boost a lot, especially with Distaff Warf and Guerrilla Warfare theme. You can actually boost for one ki. you can boost an awful lot. And there's some other support you can get from virtue tokens as well. So, and on top of that, most of their samurai are quite good at maneuvering around the table. They've got a lot of repositioning specials and key feats, and some of them even unique effects, so they can be they can surprise the opposition with where they can get to, on top of the fact that they've got flank booted, of course, which is their one of their big things, but it's not the only thing that kind of keeps your opposition guessing where they're going to attack from. So yeah, in a straight out fight, they are not going to be as good as the opposition's models, more likely than not, but they're probably not going to be playing fair. They're probably going to be dictating the actual location of the battle and have numbers on their side, things like that. So that's the kind of idea. And I think certainly when we've played, I think when I've looked at the quality of some of your models, particularly when you used to play Bastions before the Balanced Rato with the Karen Erasion, were really, really intimidating. It did feel like the only way my guys would really win is if I pretty much just had all my numbers on like one side of your warband, so that you were really only playing with half a warband against all my warband. So, and while the other half is trying to kind of,
and that feels very powerful when it gets pulled, and you just have all these samurai coming on with all of their tech and their tricks and stuff. Very hard to deal with.
Yeah, and I might have a few like Heyman or Keita or something, just like trying to slow down your other side, so that they can just go over and support the side that I was attacking. But that's when they start to really shine. And I think the problem with Shiho, probably why they're harder to get into and harder to profile, like just read a profile and really understand what it's going to do and how it's going to perform, is because you can't really easily show that on a card. With like a Minamoto guy, you can see he's got like, you know, ridiculous strength and armor and things like that. So instantly, you know what that guy is going to be, you know, that profile is going to be able to do. But with a Shiho, you've got to factor in that they're probably going to be at, you know, somewhere on the table that your opposition doesn't want them to be, things like that, and kind of having the combat on their terms, you know, surprise opposition, hopefully outnumbered, that kind of thing, boosting a lot. So they can go from being pretty poor looking to, you know, to pretty credible if kind of you can get the situation right. So situationally, they're very good.
Yeah.
That just isn't something you can easily see in a card profile read, though. So I think that's part of the trick.
I find the main thing being on the receiving end is that in a lot of cases, you don't want to go into them because they're either stepping away from you. You'll go into them, so they'll move away and waste your activation. So you're not really, you know, hit them if you want to.
Yeah.
Or they've got, you know, really good defensive tech. So yeah, you're kind of almost like waiting for them to hit you on their terms.
Yes.
That's how it feels.
Yeah. So that's a good point. So that, and that's kind of the next point they make is, okay, but when things aren't going their way, they're probably going to be on one melee dice. They're exhausted. They're surprised. So any placement error can be fatal unless, of course, you can cover it with your virtue tokens. So they do seem very good, but a few bad placements and actually you can start losing models quite quickly. And they've got rerolls and some bits like that. But I have seen that they can crumble quite fast. So, but we get on more to virtues. Does mention decisive attack, not like a massive fan of that, just because the risk reward doesn't quite seem to be there. I think for me, it's a bit situational. I used it quite a lot the other day when you had some aggressive Oni show. Because if I've got the initiative, I can just put a sidestep attack in. If all I'm doing is wasting your activations because you're fundamentally a better model than what I've got and I just need to work the scenario, then it's actually quite reliable. You know, if I've got hopefully more than two dice, hopefully up to three dice of kind of in attack and you've got one dice in defense, you know.
Yeah, I had Goro with that upgrade that makes half damage if he puts everything into attack.
Yeah.
But I don't think he got a hit off on anything all game. Yeah, you were just dancing around him. So
yeah. Well, we were working out, and it's just like it's just so hard to do any damage to that guy. There's no way the Shiho were going to do it. So I was like, well, I'll just tie him up, and that's basically all I needed to do to sort of, you know, give me enough space to get on with the rest of the game, but. That's for another day that we have to retell that some of the bits of that game. But So sidestep attack, it is more of a dodge, is what effectively they say, rather than an actual attack technique, which does make sense. It's more about kind of, you know, the activation economy and getting your guys into a better position. Goes on.
Although, should we just while we're talking about sidestep attack, there's just been a new Shiho model. Spoiled that does have a virtue. Is it a virtue that means sidestep attack does full damage, right?
It's so basically he adds an extra bullet point to the guerrilla warfare theme, so for one turn you could choose that as your guerrilla warfare benefit. So that's that character's doing a lot of support stuff. It's doing virtue stuff as well, and it can basically kind of like do an inspire kind of thing. It's doing a lot of cool stuff. But yeah, you're right. That's one of it. So I do wonder whether that's going to be enough. I mean, I think it's possible as it is. I think I'm trying to think. Maybe it's Yusuke who's got it. There's a few models that can basically do. Actually, it might be Misaki who can kind of do a sidestep attack with some damage, Batu the Plainsman, he's not Shiho, but he's Ronin that works for them, he can do it as well. So there's a few that can already kind of do it, but this would definitely make it more interesting. Actually, I think Yusuke doesn't even have sidestep attack, so he's probably the one who's a bit an outlier for that benefit. But I think it's definitely very Shiho, very thematic. We'll get on to that because I did ask him just what he might think about something like that. So about Hiroto, he's played him quite a lot in the past, a little less so now. Does bring some real punch to the clan, especially if he comes with Eldest Brother. And he also brings like some problem solving that Shiho don't really have without him. So he can prone oppositions, things like that. And overall is just great, which I absolutely agree with. You can build strategies and tactics around overall in itself, you know, regardless of all the other great things of that Hiroto brings. But yeah, he's tanky. He's got the free key. He holds up well, and there's not much he can't really handle with. It's just his real problem is just that he might get a bit bogged down sometimes, and people might activation trade a bit with him because he's like properly tooled up, almost 30 rice. So you're coming on with someone who's pretty, you know, he's got to be used correctly, and you got to keep him putting the pressure on the opposition. Otherwise, you might find that that lesser models can activation strip him. So yeah, that's fair enough. I think kind of assessment of him. Certainly in our games, he's proven to be pretty formidable, but he is pretty expensive at the same time.
Yeah, true.
Cool. So yeah, he also just talks a little bit about Yoshitaka, who's the drummer guy who got Arata to really make him perform well on the table. He can dish out Fear 6, which really helps with certain matchups, and adds more virtue to Shiho, which you can never really have enough of. So combos very well with Kita because of that, but pretty solid as a standalone piece. I've certainly found the Fear 6 very useful myself, just because it has a very wide area of effect. It just means your models really don't have to worry much about Fear Test. Particularly good with the Ashigaru, but still very handy with the Samurai. And you may actually be able to debuff the opposition a little bit every so often if they fail their test.
It's Takuya, isn't it, that he really combos well with, because he puts out he gives everybody Fear 6, and then Takuya can pop Awe, which gives everybody a Frighten marker.
Yes.
So then they can't then engage.
Yeah, that's right.
The models that cause fear.
That's right. Yeah. So
it's another kind of, it's like a layer of bubble wrap that yeah, stops you from going into.
Something getting into return. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, if it's set up right, that is very powerful. Yeah, yeah. He does have Ashigaru in his list. Should correct that. So just not the base Ashigaru, but Yoshitaka and Trooper. So Trooper with his banner and Banzai just really adds something to the list. I've actually seen this with Heyman in particular recently, and it's just really, really good, because you think these kind of like, you know, pretty cheap profiles aren't going to do too much, but when they start Banzai in, they get like, you know, obviously the activation advantage and they get the strength. If they've got Fear 6 from Yoshitaka as well, suddenly they're actually quite a menace for not very many, not much rice. I know there's a lot of support going into that, but it's support that you're generally happy to take anyway. So yes, that's pretty cool.
Scary scarecrows.
Like, yeah.
Like Wurzel Gummidge. It's a bit of a British reference for our foreign listeners. But...
yeah, so there you go. So yeah, so... He did say, like, you have to figure out how to deal with the fear that kind of sticks to Trooper. And he, on first look, he is slightly complicated because of that extra thing. It's very cool, the background as to why he's frightened of things. Won't go into that here, but we covered it on the previous podcast. But it is very manageable once you get to know the profile.
Just need to remember he's got a feat, hasn't he, that gets rid of it.
He does.
Just need to remember to pop that, right?
Pop that, and just also remember that it is always Fear 5, even if they've got Fear 6. He always counts them as Fear 5. So sometimes it's a slight advantage. And even if he does fail, he's still got Steadfast, so he's still doing what he wants to do. He's just sort of -1 dice. So there's a few things to keep in mind, but it's not super complicated once you've got the profile on the table.
In a recent game, didn't I one shot him with something that was really quite rubbish? I can't remember what it was. It might have been like a Kohanin or something, like just a basic grunt pirate.
I think it was Hiroto, Drunken Hiroto.
Was it?
But I think I double wand.
It was a dice spike, yeah, which is why I remember it.
I think I rolled double one. I was like, he had last stand as well. And it was like, you know, there's no use for it. So yeah, it was sad times. But that is life.
These things happen.
That's where you should take second chance. Yeah. So they do say, look, on the just kind of looking at some other things you do, Hiroto does allow you to bring in the small eagles, which, like, he thinks they're fine, at least for a bit of attrition and activation advantage, especially if you go on in for Hiroto. Does go on just to sort of pine a little bit on the big eagles. Not they weren't in his list, but just sort of talking more broadly that the Bouncer Arta gave them a nice boost, which I would agree with. They don't synergize too much with the rest of the gang, though, but yeah, and they're quite fragile, which, yeah, I can see why he would say that. I've used them a couple of times. I thought they were pretty good, but you kind of have to, I think, to really get the most out of them, you want to start taking things like the Hidden Eerie and things like that, and it's the sort of stuff that you may not normally take to, you know, to really get the most out of them.
Last time you used one, I remember it very well, because I was running Teiho, the cannon guy in Jung, and your eagle just tied him up.
Yeah.
For the whole game before he hit him, I think.
Yes.
Which was very sad times for me. I didn't get shot off.
Yes. Yeah, and that's when they really pay off, because they've got tremendous reach. They can get to units that you normally would really struggle with, but it's probably a bit niche that you've got someone that like that. That's pretty much a very unique profile indeed. But yeah, back on the kind of the list. So the Heyman sort of says they're just, you know, very solid profiles, just cheap. So that's always a win. And while very much likes their duty, which I think gets rid of the insignificant trait, finds Uncloak a little bit difficult to use. So thinks it's a great idea, but just even with the Errata update, it's quite hard to justify leaving the Samurai off the table for that long. Just to kind of try to get it into play. I must admit, when I first started playing Shiho, I did use it a few times against you, and it was really cool and fun. But every time I used it, I was like, I really shouldn't. I've just basically killed one of my own models and got a slightly dodgy attack off on one of yours, and I'm really relying a bit on you walking into it as well, which, you know, it was just like, you know, not particularly rewarding,
yeah,
but very fun at the same time.
I think playing into it, if I can remember, because it has been a long time, like my thinking was, I can go into this model, I can either just smash it if it remains a Heyman, and kill it, or if it does turn out to be a Samurai, at least then I know where that Samurai is.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of a, you know, it's a win-win really to go into them.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of the time.
That's it. I mean, since the Balance of Rata, it's they're better, because now they basically go...
They come back again, don't they?
They basically go into flank, come back. That is nice. I think it's just difficult to justify the, like it says, the Samurai kind of, like, you know, cost there, because you sort of need all your bodies on that crucial turn to really get into the enemy. So, but I like the idea, and I think, you know, it's a nice deterrent, but it's just on the table because you're not doing it turn one, because they don't have the key to do it turn one. It's turn two that they've got the key, and turn two you just want to bring your Samurai on. That's the bit that it's hard to get through. But I think, as Jason said recently on Arashi's Fanboy podcast, he's trying to sort of encourage people to come on with flankers slightly later in the game. So maybe that's one of those kind of, maybe that's the idea. But there we go. But I guess,
but they're still great profiles for four rice, particularly with duty.
Amazing.
They lose their insignificant, you know, cheap button pushers potentially, yeah, when you need them.
Yeah, yeah. They are absolutely fantastic. And I personally, I think most of my lists will have as many as I can really afford to take, which is normally two or three. I think there's been a few games where they've held up, like Kenko and stuff like that, and it's just been super annoying for you just to sort of have to deal with these little cheerleaders sort of thing. But yeah, they've always done a great job, and just help with that activation advantage.
They should have group. Give them group. Four nice profiles.
They're fine. They're fine.
Nerf Shiho.
Just looking a bit more at the sort of wider Shiho range of equipment. And you did mention just like there's some good stuff there, but nothing that sort of jumps out that's too significant. Like, you know, I must admit I've dabbled as well with some of the equipment, and yeah, there is good stuff like clan armor, some blades, stuff like that, but not too much of it is sort of essential. It's more for flavor, taste kind of thing. So that makes sense. I mean, you probably will put the eagle banner on trooper. That makes sense, but I think there's a lot of flex with where else you put your stuff. So he went for Titians of Yeshusi, so that makes sense. So it's for that tactician. That's quite a key one for Shiho, where you need to really win those tests and help with deployment as well. But there's,
remind me what that one does again.
That's just tactician basically. So okay. Yeah, just tactician. So you can get similar through Unfurled Wing as well if you want, like, to save rice, but I think throughout the game that's quite nice to have it, providing you keep the person alive. Just had a lot of fun with Shiho train it actually. The tunnels to set up some interesting attacks. So like there is a trick where you basically focus with the with a model next to a tunnel entrance on turn one, so that turn two they come on with extra key. So effectively you're spending rice on a train piece that's effectively giving you just key. So that works. Adam actually used that quite nicely at the weekend at Warfare, just to get Kazuo and Cub around the table. So you can do that as well. So it's a pretty cool piece of scenery. I've used it a couple of times myself. I quite like it. It's quite handy sometimes just to, if you do go for those Ashigaru archers, to be able to reposition them during the game is quite good. They've got some other scenery pieces as well. Like we were saying, the Hidden Eerie is quite good fun. They've got the wooden spikes as well, stakes. So they've got a few pieces of very cool.
I've not seen those scenery used yet. You've never used those?
Not against you, but I have used them a couple of times. It's just one of those annoying pieces of scenery that will slow the opposition down. And they've also got one which I don't think you've seen me use so much, but like Adam does quite like to use this, is the the wooden soldier, I think it's called, straw soldier, that's it.
Yeah.
And he's quite a big fan of that. I must admit, if you go for one of those and a rice bale barricade, it does give Shiho a pretty good game when it comes to zone missions and things like that. So that's really cool. I'd agree. I think I'm not quite sure how easy it is to get hold of those train packs these days. I got it when they first came out, but they are really nice packs and really good fun to put together as well. If you get hold of them. What else? So just saying, basically they've just had a lot of fun with experimenting with those kind of those extra the special cars and all the things you can take with them. As far as the cycle cars are concerned, it's brought a bit of a breath of fresh air to Shiho, particularly Distaff Wolf. So he's a pretty big fan of that. It is a big, it's a big upgrade in my mind. I think when I saw it, I thought it was a bit of a patch. You know, you kind of, they want to progress Shiho, but it's been a bit of a delay to get some new models out, so it kind of allows Shiho to play across it opens up list building, because you can take the Tanaka Wolf models into Guerrilla Warfare to the, you know, use them with the little Shiho. It means you can effectively just boost a lot as well, so it's a very good support card. And it also means that model can use has all range of access to Lul Oni upgrades, so it does an awful lot in one go, and it's a real sort of privilege for Shiho players effectively to sort of have all that on the table. So they're obviously a fan as well, just thinks it's very cool. Just on the final concluding points, and then I'll get into sort of more of a QA style. They mentioned that it's pretty important to think about scenery with Shiho and the scenario, which I completely agree with. That's very hard.
It's the case with every faction, isn't it, surely?
Absolutely.
You want to win games, yeah, anyway.
Absolutely, absolutely. But when you're coming on with flanking and things like that, that kind of forward thinking of, like, you know, where am I going to flank, and good oppositions as well will be very good at. It's very telling if someone's played against a flank heavy force early on in the game, when if they start putting their scenery in certain places, you know they know what's coming. Particularly if
and their monkeys. Maku, I think, the Koji's pack monkey that prevents flank within 3 inches.
You're like, he's quite nice. You've played against Shiho before, you can always tell. But because it's so matchup game dependent, it's very complicated and hard to codify. There's no set script for it.
I like a nice long strip of forest along one side of the table.
Yeah. Well, so I've been experimenting a bit more with Ideal Terrain. I used some of that at the weekend at Warfare. We use it quite a lot in our games, and it can have a pretty big impact. So,
we kind of didn't use it for like ever, and then we introduced it, and it had a massive impact. And then we stopped using it for a while, sort of vetoed it for a bit.
Had a bit of a breather.
So I think, it does have a really big impact.
Yeah.
Whoever manages to, you know, place it in the right place.
It is interesting. It could definitely bite you later on in the game. I've had games where I've set it up and it's worked wonders turn one and two, and then suddenly you've realised you've kind of given this corridor for your opposition to get, you know, because it goes both ways. So it can really kind of bite. So it's definitely interesting. It's part of the game, so I do like to play it, but sometimes I think it can be, you know, it can almost take center stage where you really want to focus on what else is going on. So
but on the flip side, so can, you know, a well-placed piece of difficult terrain.
Absolutely, yeah,
has the opposite effect, right?
I do like about it, it's just a fixed amount. It's just like the extra 2 inches. It almost makes me think, like, wouldn't it be cool if, like, difficult terrain was just minus 2 inches? Like, then
it
you
would
just
make life an awful lot easier.
You wouldn't have to get the old tape measure out and feel like, oh, you know, exactly, you know, yeah, we wouldn't have to be worrying about millimeters. But yeah,
my first opponent at the Warfare tournament, Ben, was always fun to play. I think he spent our game timed out, we didn't finish it, and I think it was because he spent so long complaining about having to measure the. It's because I was evil, and I put loads of difficult terrain
you,
down.
You used one of your long strips of words, didn't you?
Well, I brought some difficult terrain with my list with Kato, the villager. So yeah, he was having a hard time with difficult terrain.
Yeah,
poor guy. But I agree. I think just a kind of, you know, minus two. Much like Ideal would be a lot simpler.
Yeah, at least it would streamline things. It would, But yeah, we should get off this tangent, back on point. So I did.
Yeah.
So
sorry.
No, it's great to hear that. Just I'm talking to myself, coaching myself through this. So the
I'm nodding. I'm nodding a lot.
You're nodding.
I just can't hear it. I need to do more. Yes. Carry on. Sorry.
So Transient said, like, you know, he gave me that nice summary, which we've kind of talked through, and I thought, that's interesting. I had a few questions, so I went back and I just sort of go through the Q&A part, because there were a few bits I thought, you know, just wanted to better understand thinking. So obviously got Shiho to a very, very good, strong level. I think games were more or less all 9-0s, so sort of won them as best you can sort of thing. So he's obviously done a really good job with this list. And I just wanted to sort of better understand a few of the points he made. So I went back and sort of asked, like, is there anything that you think Shiho may currently be lacking, accepting that you can't have it all? You know, it's going to be some limitations, as you said, you know, the faction plays a certain way, and that makes sense. Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, the potential fragility of the sort of moderate close combat power is sort of what kind of makes them who they are in a way. So that doesn't need to change. It's just, and yeah, they are lacking in certain aspects of the game, but there are areas that you know, mechanics and such that they could be not necessarily strengthened, but just more choices. And if they had the opportunity to, you know, generate profiles and things like that, then that's the direction he'd like to see them go in. Now, as a Grandmaster winner, I'm assuming we will have opportunity now to add input to a profile, a Shiho profile. So that I hope that's the case. But just more generally, I think that's a pretty sharp observation, I think, of Shiho at the moment. They actually are performing reasonably well, it seems. Like, if I look on Longchanks, the average is pretty solid, and they are starting to win, you know, tournaments, and they have been for some time. But the list for RT, it's a little bit narrow. You'd see people swapping things out in and out, but if you actually count the number of models, it actually is quite a small range. I think it's about the same size as like the Ninja range, and they've had a lot of additions lately. And if you compare it to like Ito or one of the more long established range, it's much, much smaller. And that's before you account for the fact that, you know, the Tanaka work very differently and tend to stick.
Just counted, there's 21 profiles.
Yeah.
And that's including the Wolf Clan.
Yeah. So that's.
Yeah, it's not huge, is it?
It's not a lot. So it's not a huge surprise. And yeah, they're, you know, players are pretty good at finding out the good stuff, they say, and kind of tend to focus on that. But it's not like every Shiho list is the same. Don't get me wrong. They're certainly not like, you know, there are a lot of choices, a lot of different ways you can still play within that. And it's just saying that, you know, the more variety we can bring in, the better. And I think, you know, to an extent, you use Ronin to bring in that flavor, but that it doesn't have that Shiho feel to it in the same way. I appreciate it is a way to play Shiho with like the mercenary kind of feel. But I think what we're talking about here is more kind of like the Lul kind of, well, not even Lul, but the Shiho proper, let's say. So I think that's a good observation. Next, I just asked, okay, so I'm not sure if I covered this in the blurb actually, but they did say they play Rokan as well, and it's a slightly easier ride with Rokan. Gav's looking at me furiously right now.
Well, I think it can be. Rokan, certainly with the monks, they can be easier to pilot. They're a bit more sort of, yeah, I hesitate to say point and click, but yeah, they can be a bit point
more,
and click.
More forgiving, I think, is how I would say. Yeah. And I think that's what they sort of say. They play both. Yeah, both are challenging and interesting in their own way, but Rokan are probably a bit more forgiving. Yeah, he just says, well, you know, to me anyway, it's not so much about the outcome. It's about the, you know, the enjoyment in the game. So I was sort of trying to say, you know, well, you know, how do you compare the two? But I think he's really just saying he enjoys the Shiho, probably the Shiho tricks, and, you know, their kind of their maneuverability and the way that they can kind of weave through a game. That's what really enjoys. He genuinely really just enjoy playing Shiho, which I'm hoping I'm conveying through my articulation notes, but it comes across very clearly as I'm reading this. Next little question. So in guerrilla warfare, do you have like a go-to benefit and term for when you use them, because you can select these benefits throughout the game on turns that you need them. And effectively, it's sort of a, it all depends kind of thing, though would say the cheap boost does tend to come into play around two or three, which is pretty standard for guerrilla warfare, I would say. You're typically running a lot of flankers and you want that big turn. Not always, but quite often that's what you need. Like, you know, maybe you're in a situation where you, someone's refused flank you and you've chosen the wrong kind of side and you need to address that using the feed benefit. But generally, I think you play to get that cheap boosting so that your models can do, you know, what you need them to do, perform well on the early turns. But yeah, it basically it all depends. And I think that's, you know, the key thing there, the scenario, the opposition, they all play a big part of that decision. But no doubt the cheap boost is a nice one. I did an ask, like, how do you rate Takua? Is he in the Ashigaru camp of nice, but for friendly games? Because I've found him quite good personally, but I know he's not necessarily a go-to. He sort of said sort of a lot of potential there and lovely model, but sometimes hard just to find space for him. So he does tend to see a little less play. That seems fair. Like, I mean, I really like him, but he does synergize a lot with the Ashigaru and he's got like a really good trick, but it is a bit of a one trick and it's done. And it can have a massive effect on the game, but depending on the opposition, it may, or, you know, timing, things like that, it may not. So I personally think it's a very powerful profile, but a little bit, he is, when you're trying to get as many flanking samurai as possible, he's kind of on the expensive side for Chiho. I can see how he's hard to fit in sometimes.
So, I mean, I think he's playing into him and sort of, you know, the way that you've used it. I like to use the bubble wrap analogy. You know, it can be the case where you've got virtue effects that mean when I engage you, you can step away. You've got so with Takuya, you know, if he pops or and you're also putting out your frightened markers as well, then that's a turn where, you know, you can't engage anything. So it is matchup dependent, absolutely. But if you're running something like, for example, say like an Alpha Strike monk list where you've just got, you know, powerful combat characters that want to get stuck into combat, you can go like 2-3 turns and you're just not able to engage anybody.
Yeah.
It's like you have to, it would be possible to engage, but you have to get through like 1-3 layers of bubble wrap to actually get there in the first place. So that can be, you know, it's a frustrating experience and very, very powerful.
Shiho bubble wrap. That is my dank against you. I do like to basically use a lot of Urshi tokens, a lot of Takua to stop Gav from doing what he wants to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. There we go.
I think he's great. Takuya, I think he's one of the, for being on the receiving end, he seems like one of the strongest models in the faction for sure.
So that, I mean, that's interesting. I mean, it's fine to have different views, but that's why I was keen to get you on the podcast for this one, because, you know, I'm obviously a fan of my Shiho, but you can give the what it feels like on the other side of the table kind of perspective. I know you're not a massive fan of the new Kaden that gives out fear, but I'm sort of like,
yeah, it's the same thing. Yeah, it's the automatic frightened.
Yeah,
it's just a really powerful effect. I mean, it effectively neuters your force for a whole turn, and you know, if you're trying to play the scenario, you've got a plan. You know, quite often that losing that turn can be the difference between a win and a loss.
Yeah.
So it's a powerful tool.
Powerful one, yeah. Cool. So then I asked, what would make Ashigaru more appealing? You know, would it be more synergies, more efficiency? What do you think? And sort of said, like, obviously a simpler solution, yeah, just you could just lower the price, but it's not really the best solution. And I think that's, that's a good assessment, because I think that would be the easiest thing to do, but it wouldn't necessarily really like, yeah, they are that because in the as a faction, their free melee dice is kind of a premium in the faction. So I think it's sort of saying, like, you know, maybe there could be a theme that could kind of bring them more in line or to the forefront, or like an attractive sort of synergy would be nice, but no real clear idea about what to do with them. Very much trusting in GCT to do what they do best and sort of, you know, mm-hmm. keep kind of making players kind of interested in taking slightly different models over time. So yeah, so that, again, I think that's a fair assessment.
But what do you think? You like your Yarrow men?
I do.
I think they're worth the rise.
I think if you can get all of the synergies working, then they can definitely punch above their weight. It's still, like I said, it's a bit of a I'm not gonna sort of say like they're, you know, compared to other factions, 8 rice models, this 12 rice model is like, you know, fantastic for just on its own in a vacuum. But I think if you take the right kind of list, they can shine, and there's a lot of synergies you can get in Shiho which will elevate them up to a level where they actually can do quite well, particularly if you can get good value out of hold the line. But I totally get how, you know, just looking at the card in isolation, they look a little bit, you know, toppy in terms of price and, you know, all that. So, but I do think there's a place for them. Even if you just use one with the bodyguard, I think that is absolutely fine. As I said, actually, the more, like, you know, technically Yoshitaka and Trooper are Ashikara and they're being taken more, and that then means there's more hold line opportunities if you're taking them anyway. So it does feel like there's more there for the Ashigaru to interact with now. That sort of, you know, it was difficult because Yoshitaka before the Errata just was a hard profile to justify, and Trooper wasn't allowed into guerrilla warfare, so that kind of has really helped open up the kind of the list building opportunities and the synergies. So yeah, I think there is something there for the Ashigaru, and hopefully kind of people will try them out a little bit more. To make them work more, I probably agree, like I'd probably rather see more synergies. I don't think I really want to see like a brute force kind of drop him in rice. Just that to me just seems a bit too kind of a little bit too kind of direct and not
lacking in finesse.
Yeah, I think their whole thing is synergy, so like mm-hmm. yeah, but the more they can do to make players really feel like that they're really worth that rice, I think the better. I don't think they're a long way off having that kind of appeal, because I do actually think a few things, as I mentioned, just have fallen into place for them to make them more viable. Just time would tell on that one. Cool. So next question, I said was like profiles which work well at range and in melee sound like sort of the sweet spot for Shiho. Like they like kind of a melee model that also has a bow. And just like what do you think about think models like Shiho Shooter, who's a little bit more kind of range focused, or the Falconers that have just recently come out? Are these kind of like, you know, a little bit too kind of focused on that one aspect of the game? It's always said, like, you know, generally just not a massive fan of no line of sight that's needed mechanic, you know, that Shiho have got quite a lot of access to now, just because a big part of the game is kind of cover and things like that and maneuvering around the table. I do get that. And I think there's still plenty of opportunity for that in the game, but I do appreciate what he's saying. He's saying that they basically kind of can navigate that part just with this indirect kind of shooting that they've got access to. But agrees that they can be effective, but a little less to taste, if you like. So that's fair enough. I must admit, I've seen Adam use Shiho Shooter quite a few times, and he is quite good at just picking off a sort of a wounded model that you're hoping the opposition just couldn't get to, kind of thing, that maybe just about survived an attack from a samurai, somehow kind of fought their way out of it, and he can just pick them off. So he's got, yeah, he can be quite annoying to play into, but he's not cheap. I think you are paying quite a high tax for him, yeah, and the Falconers.
Rice, isn't
yeah, and that's a lot. The Falconers, they're not that cheap either. I think they're, what are they, like 14? So you are paying a fair bit for these models that can do that trick. And they do have some limitations in terms of what they can do, how they do it. They tend to get kind of moderate success levels off. Shooter is probably a slight outlier that he could get a more higher success level. But yeah, that I just thought that was interesting, just expand to that kind of that range kind of aspect of the game, kind of how that could be explored. Next question. I just said, like, look, I've just noticed that you had Second Chance and Preordain in the list. Like, what's that for? Is it to mitigate, obviously, like, low dice pool samurai, or help their attacks get through crucial moments, that kind of thing? And I said, like, all of these things, yes. So with Shiho, there's some great opportunities you can't afford to miss, and at the same time, if you do, that could cost you the games if you don't. If you're not successful with them. So Second Chance and Preordain are there for that, just to help you with those, those key moments where you really need your dice to be hot, or a certain outcome, that kind of thing. I must admit, I do keep trying to remind myself, put Preordained in, or Second Chance if you can't afford that. It's in a tournament where you're playing, three or four, maybe five games, it's going to come into play. You just sort of need to find that right for it, because let's face it, we all feel like the pain when we get, like I said earlier, that double one and stuff like that. I just sort of think, well, there's literally a card to help with that. Mm-hmm. So we just need to make some space for it.
True.
Then I asked, so look, general feeling is that players like sidestep attack to do, would like sidestep attack to do damage. Would you kind of see that as a change to the risk reward benefit? And obviously that would be a benefit, but Shiho aren't necessarily out there to really, kill the opposition. It might just be helpful to do a bit of extra chip damage along the way, and that's fine. But primarily using that sidestep attack for repositioning, and I agree that's fair enough. You may occasionally get some extra damage for it, but it's not the primary aim. I must admit, I think with one of your aggressive on each show, I think I got like a perfect sidestep attack off, and you like got a one in defense, and I was like, if only that did damage. It's obviously a benefit, but it's not like you need to build your whole game plan around it. I did ask him just like, Keita's obviously a favourite, and do you rely on his move out of base to base effect, or do you use the others? And he said obviously the move out of base to base effect, which, if anyone's not played Keita, you basically pop a virtue token and your model will move out of base to base and zone of control of the enemy, and effectively waste the enemy's activation. That's really what it comes down to. And it's
quite waste their activation and leave them in a bad place, potentially to be
so
hit by someone else.
It's pretty good. He can do a lot of other cool virtue effects as well, and he's pretty solid overall model for a quasi support samurai. It sort of brings that kind of ability to add more
bubble wrap
to your force. he's key model really in the game, just to keep Shiho on par with other clans at the moment. He's probably relied on quite heavily. Maybe again, like, as things change, more characters come out. We've seen this new samurai, he kind of adds a support role as well, so maybe that will help kind of diversify things. You might have, I'm not saying he's a replacement to Keita, but he's he's kind of feels similar, kind of in the sense of like a support samurai model, and so you may have both, but actually you could also justify one or the other. So as the range expands, you'll probably see Kita might have a bit more competition, I think, is the hope.
Well, I for one would like to see less of Kita.
He's your favorite model, isn't he?
Yeah.
So next question, I said that, like, I also find Hymen are quite good in their own right. It is a bit of like, it is a hard to get uncloaked to really work, but it's a cool idea, and it's a very Shiho thing to do. But yeah, perhaps some, you know, how would you make it work? Like, perhaps if a samurai could reflank, could that make it work? So any ideas for these guys? And is it like, you know, it's quite convinced that good solutions are out there to be found with, you know, without really changing any rules, and it might just be releasing a new profile, maybe something that kind of just leans more into that kind of mechanic from the outset, because we don't really have like a Shiho samurai who's like, you know, got extra stuff that's clearly like there for uncloaking, so that could be quite cool. But yeah, just something to make it a little bit more tempting would be nice to see. Just moving on, another question, just got a few more of these to go. Distaff Wolf seems to have opened up list building options, and I actually quite like that he took it on Naboko. But sort of just what appealed to you about that profile of others? And I must admit, like, I actually tend to use him as well when I'm using Distaff Wolf, so I'm a little bit biased in this, so it's a little bit of a leading question. But yeah, he said in the list he played, like, Naboku seemed like the most suitable, so he's got a little bit less synergy with the other wolves. He's sort of the lone wolf, so that comes across in the profile. His cost is high enough to effectively be able to pass on his bonus to the other samurai, and with a decent melee pool of free and access to feint, and possibly an extra dice when he's attacking an exhausted model, he's pretty good all-round profile and has a bow. So that is quite a lot in a nice little package. And so, yeah, like, Kazuo is obviously nice, but this guy kind of is a nice rice point, which allows you to still take lots of other models. So nice summary, I think. I think it's a very solid profile and definitely a good contender for your Distaff Wolf. On the last question, I just said, like, just any tips for that train placement, given, you know, you mentioned it being pretty important and that Shiho do have a lack of, like, footed, which could be an issue. And as I said before, really, just there is no set play piece for train. It is just one of those skills that you have to pick up by playing games, particularly at tournaments. We don't do preset terrain in Bushido. I don't think we've ever done it. I know it is possible to do it, but I personally think it is a really interesting and nice part of the game that you can you have to set your own terrain up. And it's part of the whole kind of, you know, player experience and a big part potentially of how you actually kind of get a bit of advantage and win the game or lose games sometimes. So it's
absolutely, I think my experience of terrain, it's a whole phase of the game that you've got to learn to be good at, otherwise you're just going to lose, particularly if you're playing into players who know what they're doing with terrain placement. It can just have an overwhelming effect on how the game plays out. So yeah, learn how to do it is my advice.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with that. And it's one of those things you pick up as you play more games, particularly at tournaments, I think. Because I think why tournament play is different, it's just even if you get used to the train rules, you're still using your own scenery, and so you kind of get reliant on a certain level of stuff. And then you go to you might go to a table at a tournament and just be given like a bunch of, like, you know, hopefully good scenery but different scenery from what you're used to, and that's just knowing what to do with that can be a, you know, a key kind of part of your overall kind of, you know, day. So
good point.
So yeah, so so that was sort of, you know, thanks a lot, Transients, just to kind of, you know, put all that time and effort into writing all that down, which you know, I've tried to convey here, and answering all my questions, my many questions, trying to delve into your mind of how Shiho work. Just one thing I wanted to finish on is just nothing to do with Shiho, just that it's pretty important in their kind of meta, their community, to sort of promote goodwill drawn tournaments, to give out prizes in reverse order, with sort of the player last getting, you know, the big prizes effectively. That's quite interesting. Nice. So I might have to think about that next time as well.
Just means I'll get more prizes that way.
Well, I don't want people to tank their last game just to do it. But yeah, you could see you'll win either way. So it's just a nice way of relieving a bit of, you know, pressure if there is any perceived pressure. So that's cool. Yeah, I think, you know, it's a good custom, and so yeah, it wouldn't be a bad one to see more become more widespread. So that, I think, is a great way to conclude, you know,
fantastic... our whistle stop tour of Shiho.
Yeah, yeah. And...
only took us an hour and a quarter. I hope people have stayed with us.
Yes. And we should say well done again for Transients to have won the French Grandmasters.
Absolutely. Yeah, well done. And thanks for giving us stuff to talk about.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks a lot for sending that all in. So, yeah, I think that's a good...
Shall I do some talking now?
please.
So yeah, let's have a little chat about my experience at the Warfare tournament that you ran last weekend.
Yep.
So I, there's nothing like, it's no big surprise that, you know, I won it or came last or anything. I finished I think a respectable fifth, which was, yeah, better than I expected going in, because I was using a list that I hadn't really used too much. I think I'd had one practice game against you, Craig. So saying that, let's run through the list. I've used Bastions of the Mountain a few times in the past, but haven't really played it since the Bulls got nerfed. And I've been branching out. It's not because the Bulls got nerfed, I stopped playing it. It's branched out into some other factions, and I've had far too many other things to try. But my list was... Atsuko, the six rice healing rice farmer, Kato, who comes with his tilled field terrain element, most interestingly Kaio and Mangetsu, the new Koi twins. So this was the thing that was the real sort of new thing that was challenging to for me to use. I took one Kawano Rojin, one bull, one Koji's Pack Monkey, Taki and Niseru, and two rice farmers. And then, as far as Ronin were concerned, Ichiro, the peasant with the sling, and probably most importantly, Ashinaga Tanaga, and he had pacifism. So this, and my tournament experience was kind of the pacifism show, really. The games that, well, it was super important, and I probably would have lost all my games without it.
Okay.
And Taki Niseru are always, I think, you know, the MVP really for you know, scenario play. I also had Year of the Risen Sun and Rice Bell Barricades. Oh, and Moment of Enlightenment for some extra key. And a rope trap, and I was getting free traps every turn with the theme benefit.
Did you remember to use them though?
Well, sometimes I did, sometimes I didn't. So my first game was against the ever lovely Ben, Always good fun to play Ben, but we do tend to end up kind of talking far too much and not finishing our games out. So this was one of those examples. I think we only got to we closed out turn four, and it was a scoring game 2-4 and 6. So
I was a bit worried about scaring players off using death clocks. I mean, just the name, but I think next year I may actually use clocks, just because I think actually players kind of expect it. And like talking to a few players during the day, it wouldn't have been a big deal. So it just potentially stops that. Now I did select on purpose some slightly earlier scoring scenarios, just knowing that people might be a bit slow to get going for the first couple of games, and wanted to make sure we got scores on the doors. But it felt like most people were getting a reasonably decent way through their games, not like the first few games post lockdown, which are really kind of everyone was super rusty. But yeah, I think that might be something to change up for next time. Anyway, just reflecting on that, I did walk past your game, and I did think, I hope that they are getting all okay. The only thing I did see that was quite funny was trying to think the guy's name now. The abomination was
Yankee.
Yes, you clearly were rope trapping him, and he was still on the back line. I just felt so bad for him. He's like withering on the back line.
Yeah, I think. Well, actually, I hit him with a pit trap, which he fell into first turn. So, which is extra good because that did I think 2 points of damage to him. So with his damage sort of stacking up, it meant that he wasn't going to survive like for that final brutal turn.
Yeah.
Not that we actually got there because we timed out. But yeah, the what was the scenario? The scenario was
it key?
K.
Yeah.
Key.
Yeah.
K-E-double-I.
Yeah.
And that was the 6 objective one, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So what was really important, like I said, pacifism on Ashinaga Tanaga was so important there because it meant I could prey on the because with my list being so many models, it's like it's difficult for him to get through me to my back objectives and prey on my threes.
Yeah.
So I could prey on the twos and then use pacifism to still be scoring 3 points.
Yeah.
With one prayer. So yeah, it was didn't go great for Ben. My traps were working. I think a lot of my dice rolls were pretty hot. I was killing off it. So he was using Ito. He did manage to control one of my models into somebody else, but it didn't really do anything. So yeah, I think he didn't have the best of luck. We didn't finish out the game. But yeah, pacifism on Ashinaga was the key thing there. And so I won that one 2-0. Yep. Not sure if it would have been a 3-0 if we'd finished it out. Possibly still would have been a 2-0 because he was staging a bit of a comeback, I think, by turn four.
Yeah, okay.
But it was nice. Anyway, yeah, to get a win in the first game.
Yeah, very nice. I mean, I definitely have found like the villager list is a seriously difficult list to play in the circle scenarios where you've got 6 objectives, because to your point, you really want to be onto those backline objectives and you just can't get through the numbers quick enough to do it. So it becomes more of a mid-table brawl, and you obviously are prepared for that with pacifism just to give you that slight edge. So I've even found with my Blue Gale Scouts, who should be the best really in the game at doing scenarios, that it's really hard just to kind of deal with the numbers and the pressure and your scenario play, because that would already be enough. But then you've got Taike and Nisaru, who are just bonkers when it comes to scenario play. So,
and we'll get to them in a bit later. In the next two games, I think, MVPs for the whole tournament were Taike and Nisaru for their fast scenario play and the pacifism on Ashinaga. So those two combined, those three rather combined, were fab. Coming back to terrain placement, obviously I'd thought about it in advance, with taking Kato with his tilled field and the rice bell barricades. So I did really kind of screw Ben with so he placed the first terrain, so I knew that I had choice of table side, and I was able to pretty much put a line of difficult terrain like all across his. It's just 3 inches away from his deployment zone, so he had to move through difficult terrain with kind of his whole force really to get anywhere. So it was almost kind of, you know, one in the deployment phase really. So poor Ben, alas, he'll beat me one day. I think I'm starting to become his nemesis in tournament games, but he's always fun to play against. Thanks, Ben. So yeah, game two then was against another Rokan list, but this was monks. A guy called Joe, another great opponent. So he had Akusa, Kenko, Aiko. The two Unsui monks. What's her name? The one with the little ice one, and Haru with the rock one.
Oh yeah, I know. They're like from the start set, those ones.
Yeah. Which I think I put them on the table once, but very rarely see them. But anyway, yeah, it padded out his list with some numbers. So this was a game where Taki Niseru managed to go up, and so this was Omaju, so the three idols in the middle. So pacifism didn't come into play in this game, which did then mean I could use Ashinaga a little bit more aggressively, although actually he just ended up turning idols in the end. And I think it was just a numbers game again. I had the bodies on the table to take and the speed for Taki Niseru to turn the first two idols, and then just kind of hold the monks off for a couple of turns. He was again staging a comeback, so I scored the first victory point. The second victory point in turn four was a draw because he managed to turn. So I did have the two idols turned, but he managed to turn his one on his flank,
yeah,
and then the center one in like the last activation of the turn. So he managed to get that second VP as a draw, and then yeah, I think he was staging a bit of a comeback. So if we had finished that game out, so, you know, death clocks again, that might well have been a 1-1
yeah.
draw. But I won it 1-0 in the end, which was nice. Yeah, and all the while, so I haven't mentioned the Koi twins.
Yeah,
so they're effectively kind of sucking up all the ki from my list and then pumping it out. So very, very useful with Taki in particular, because, you know, if as long as you keep a koi near to him, he's effectively got infinite placements,
yeah,
so he can get around, you know, quite handily. But I'm still not convinced that the koi are it would be arguably better to have taken a second bull, I think, over the koi mechanic. Yep. But it was fun.
How are you finding the koi narration now?
So I ran them once post errata, I think, against you. Ran two of them, and I found that group was a massive, because I used to really enjoy their tireless as probably one of their strongest attributes, being able to just wait and activate, you know, other stuff with somebody in melee with them, wait until they're exhausted, and then, you know, so defend, and then hit once they're exhausted, and you may be up a dice. But group kind of neuters that a little bit, because, you know, eventually you have to activate a cower, and then you've got to activate both. So it's, you know, reducing that tireless benefit a bit. Mm-hmm. But
yeah,
they're still really good. Still really, really, really good.
Yeah. What about Ichiro as well? Not to take too far off the point, but I thought Hope was potentially pretty good with the villagers, but with the koi.
Yeah, I just forgot to use it all tournament.
Fair enough.
So yeah, Hope gives you a reroll. I think I was too focused on using Ichiro just as a sort of shooting threat, really. And he did well with in the first couple of games anyway, with just putting some damage on people. But yeah, no, I need to. I can see the utility of getting that reroll mechanic in there. And there were a couple of times where I thought to myself, I really should have popped that, but it was too late. So you know, he was worth taking in the list, you know, to get access to the animal trap. Although, yeah, animal traps didn't really come in that handy. I will note, yeah. So in my first game, my traps did really well. I think Ben failed pretty much all of the tests, whereas in the second game, I think Joe passed all the tests, so the traps did nothing. So you know, swings and roundabouts.
Yep.
But then to game three, so I was very surprised that I'd won a couple of games and was going into, you know, game three, you know, doing okay. But then I saw I was facing Bleeding Moon, and I've played into those before, and they're just such like melee monsters. And given that I had squishy peasants, I thought, oh dear, this is going to go horribly wrong, and I'm just going to get murdered.
Yeah.
Which was doubly concerning because the scenario Botaku was corner deployment. So I had this 12 model list that I was squeezing into this tiny corner, whereas he had four models. So he had Rin, Katsumi, the Moon Lion, and Karasu. And this game was absolutely fascinating. So it's the only game in the tournament that we did actually get to all six turns.
Okay.
And we finished on a dead draw, a 0-0 draw. And it was just so tight and so cagey. It was quite high scoring. Like, so they were preying on there was two idols in the corners,
yeah,
in or next to the deployment zones, and then a zone in the middle, mm-hmm, for 2 points. And interestingly, he put ideal terrain like bang in the middle of the zone in the center.
Okay, yep.
Which meant, you know, it kind of accelerated the ninjas getting where they wanted to go. But luckily for me, he hadn't faced Taki Naseru before, so he didn't really know what they were capable of doing. And they were able to, essentially with judicious sort of teleports, get firstly into the zone to contest it after he'd, you know, finished his activations, because I was, even with his three activations per model, I still had more. And then they were able to whip up and start preying on the idol. In this game, my traps actually did really well, sort of in clutch moments where, you know, he could have moved in to stop me preying, or the Moon Lion wanted to attack. I managed to, you know, get traps off, you know, immobilizing stuff and all that.
Ouch, that's going to hurt for ninjas.
So, yeah, he was a, you know, knew what he was doing and was a good player. But essentially, the game came down to the very last dice roll, where, so I'd killed Katsumi, I'd killed Rin. No, hadn't killed Rin. Rin was still alive. I'd killed Katsumi, killed Karasu. The Moon Lion was on one wound left. And Rin was down at the bottom, kind of preying on my idol.
Yep.
And I had very little left. I had Ashinaga Tanaga, the Buffalo. I think that was it. But essentially, I needed to... The Buffalo was fighting the Moon Lion.
Yeah.
And needed to disengage from the Moon Lion to move into the zone. So we were tied on victory points. If he'd managed to disengage, he could have moved into the zone, scored the final 2 points, which would have given me the 1-0 win. So, and it was three dice versus three dice, and he rolled better dice, so I couldn't get away.
Tight match.
Reroll would have been nice. It was one of those games where we both made some mistakes in sort of, you know, crucial places, but generally kind of, you know, played a really tight game, and it was fascinating.
Yeah.
And a 0-0 draw was a better result than I thought I'd get going into the game.
Yeah. It's unusual to get 0-0s playing a full game with Bushido, but it just, as you said, it just must be a very tight game because you were both scoring, just not quite able to...
I think we were both on, because the scenario points didn't reset. So I think end of the game, we were both on like 15
yeah.
or it was a high number of scenario points that we both had. And it was just, you know, every turn it was kind of almost like the last activation of each turn, like one of us would score just to bring it, you know, up to a level, so we didn't score the VPs.
Great game.
And what was fascinating as well, so I finished fifth, like I said, with two wins and a draw.
Mm-hmm.
And I was obviously, like you do, it's like, you know, you have to work out what would I have placed had I managed to roll those three dice better than his three dice and won the final game. A 1-0 win on that one still would have only put me in, I think, third position. And yet I would have been the only player on three wins. So it's very interesting how Bushido scores.
Bushido scoring is interesting. You do get quite a fair bit for a draw.
And big scoring wins.
Big scoring wins, know,
do,
yeah.
do score a lot better than, say, a 1-0.
Yeah, just a marginal win is not much better than a draw and all that. So it's quite interesting how it works. But it sounds like you had some good games.
It was great fun. It was really nice to get the villagers back on the table again. I think, you know, it was nice to, you know, even though I'm not convinced that the Koi kind of, you know, bring them up a step in terms of power level, they do give it an interesting new mechanic and an interesting new way to play, you know, the theme, which I really enjoyed.
Well, again, from the other side of the table, when Takir has got all the key he needs, it does feel like it does a lot for them. But
he's very similar to the Shiho bubble wrap effects that I complain so hard about. You know, if he's got a Koi in range, then, you know, you go into him and he can jump away, and he can do that as many times as he wants. There's no way of pinning him down unless you shoot him.
Yeah. He's a tricky one to deal with, and well, good. I'm glad you had a good time. As I said, I've probably got a few reflections on just running the event, which we are looking to do next year, all being well. So I think
I should flag as well. So there's a new podcast in town, in case anybody hasn't listened to it, the Arashi's Fanboys podcast. So those guys went to the tournament as well.
Yes.
And then, so they had a battle report. They reported on a game against Adam was his name, the Bleeding Moon player that I faced in round three.
Yes.
One of those faced in an earlier round. So
Yeah. So you can
lucky guy, he's getting all of his games reported on podcast.
Exactly.
Famous.
Exactly what you want.
If you're listening, Adam, thanks for the game. It was a really, really good one. The tightest game I've ever played of Bushido.
Hopefully we'll be again there again next year. Like that, I certainly intend to run it again next year at Warfare, because it's a pretty decent event. I think they get a lot of footfall, and there's lots of space to expand there. You could get more tables. We got 12 players, which it's not big numbers compared to, like, you know, some systems, but it's pretty good for Bushido. Twice as many as last year. Some familiar faces from last year is always nice to see people come back year on year. Just hopefully we can get that right balance, because I think it's just trying to get that sweet spot where you cater for people who want a more competitive kind of game, because maybe they're preparing for, like, the Grandmasters, but also you might have new players, or maybe a bit of both. You know, it's just trying to cater for, you know, all different kind of needs. And I did it on the Sunday, which is pretty tight on time. I might think about doing it Saturday next time round, so that there's a little bit more time between rounds and things like that, because you kind of work out and it should all make sense. But, like, on the day, you do actually need to factor in some breaks and things and sort of gaps around stuff like that. So definitely a few logistical kind of, like, thoughts on how we could do things a bit different. But I think generally, you know, it's a good, great way of getting free games in. So,
It would help if we turned up on time, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would have helped. that was entirely my fault. I don't know where the time went, but I think it's just that kind of extra, you know, the extra kind of time that I factored in ended up not being enough extra time. So we did have a lot of redundancies and contingencies for a lot of things, and so we sort of fudged that one back on track by cutting into lunch time, unfortunately. But
bottom line, it was a great event. So highly recommended to anybody that can make it next year.
I like to keep it kind of to a level where lots of people are happy to come along, as broad a field as possible. So and we get a lot of prize support, which is fantastic. So we've got a lot of great prize support. So I think most people walked away with something cool. And
yeah, it was some good stuff. Get a mat and a carry case and all sorts of fun stuff.
All sorts of cool stuff.
I walked away with a Ascension model. So I hope that doesn't mean I have to start a new faction.
That's how it starts.
Yeah, maybe not. It'll go in the pile.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Well,
yeah,
that's been,
I think we're done, aren't we?
That's been good. Yeah. So, I guess just, thanks for listeners. If you've got through all that with us, that's, hopefully an interesting update on a European Grandmasters and, some insights from a local tournament that we've run and, looking to do so again in the future. So, that's us done. So, just thanks for listening.
Signing out. Thanks for listening, guys.
Thanks. Bye now.
Bye.